We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello and you're very welcome to Your Politics podcast from RT. Paul Cunningham here, sitting in the hot seat. I'm joined by Mary Regan and Mia O'Lahan of our political staff. And guys, I'm going to start today with a tweet from our Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, and he says, "I have just signed the authorisation for the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine by our vaccinators effectively immediately." But what sort of caught my eye was of the sort of 600 comments or replies to him, virtually half of them were just a thumbs up. What do we make of this, Mary Regan?
I think we make of it that Twitter is a place where originality goes to die and it's very easy for people to just go and copy each other and become part of a sort of consensus approach on Twitter. This was quite a serious tweet, I would have thought. A lot of people wondering what level of AstraZeneca vaccines we're going to get. It's been the cause of a big row between the European Commission and the company itself. And he was giving that final figure that we had thought was originally meant to be 600,000. Then it was 300,000 doses. Then it was back up to 400,000 AstraZeneca doses by the end of March. And this was the response that Stephen Donnelly got on Twitter. It was a play on a story that appeared in the Sunday Independent, which was a Freedom of Information request, which showed the correspondence between Tony Holohan and Stephen Donnelly. And at one point, when Dr. Tony Holohan texted him about the seriousness of the situation and reference to the R number, Stephen Donnelly replied with a single thumbs up emoji. And I wasn't aware that the politics of emojis was so fraught with danger, but apparently the thumbs up emoji to some millennials, I believe it's quite passive aggressive. I would have thought the beauty of emojis is that you can apply your own interpretation to them. And, you know, there was a lot of conjecture applied to that thumbs up emoji. And I think in the overall serious point, it was some clarity on the level of AstraZeneca doses that we're going to get. And I think Stephen Donnelly would be more concerned and more focused on how that will play up than, you know, the sort of Twitter copycat carry on.
But sir, we're a podcast, so we can do what the goddamn hell we want. Mia O'Lahan, can I bring you in this? Has Stephen Donnelly single-handedly killed off the emoji for any other politician in the future?
I think he has. I think he has, and I've heard that from a number of senior figures within the government, that this particular emoji is no longer deemed suitable anyway in any future correspondence that they may have with each other or officials. So that's interesting. Interesting too is the piece on the RTE website on the brainstorm section, where it said people who use emojis typically rate themselves as agreeable, pleasant and likable. So that's interesting too, isn't it? That some ministers, if they fall into that category and are using emojis, may see themselves in that particular light. I think Stephen Donnelly obviously is dealing with the very serious issue, but in media appearances since that story by Hugh O'Connell last Sunday, he did volunteer to talk about this. And again, back into that Oscar Wilde sense, there's only one thing worse than being talked about, and that's not being talked about. Most politicians believe that. But of course, in political terms, that's not always particularly accurate. And if you get talked about too much for the wrong reasons or in a reason that isn't deemed by the public to be appropriate or suitable, well, then that can make the challenge of making yourself likable all the more great indeed. And I think, given the week that Stephen Donnelly's had, perhaps now with the signing of that particular contract, the government might be on something of a firmer footing, but they still face great and grave questions today, really, particularly in relation to the over 70s and the concern, as voiced by several TDs in the Dáil, centres on that question that they're getting repeatedly from their constituencies and indeed from their wider families as well. And that is, when will the over 70s all be vaccinated? And there's no clear answer to that this evening.
It's taking a wider lens, Mary Regan. I mean, the idea of how the government presents itself on this vital issue of vaccine is particularly important, because the danger, obviously, is that if you allow yourself to be filmed,
if you allow yourself to be photographed beside vaccine, if you become completely associated with it and then that project doesn't work out, then there could be problems for you.
Yeah, and you know, it is a tricky one for the government. They certainly were guilty of trying to sell a pretty positive message around the vaccine rollout. If you look back over the past couple of weeks, even months, you know, running up to Christmas and beyond that. But it's tricky because on the one hand, people want to know, they want some indication of when they are going to get vaccinated, when the whole country is going to get vaccinated, when there might be some return to life normality as we know it. So I can see what Stephen Donnelly was trying to do there by giving some indications around when the whole country can expect to be vaccinated. But the flip side of that and the problem is that, you know, no matter how heavily he might caveat those kind of promises, no matter how many times he can say, oh, this is indicative, this isn't, you know, subject to change, people still just look at the overall message, which was that he said in the Dáil this day 2 weeks ago that he expected the whole population to be vaccinated by September. Now, he did really heavily caveat it, but again, the message went out that this was what people were to expect. So that is the danger, I think, for politicians in promising timelines, because this whole situation is subject to change. A lot of it is outside the government's control. You know, we've seen difficulties in relation to vaccine supplies from all of the major companies, and the government really finds out at short notice really how many on any given particular week they're going to get. So they're working with very indicative figures, really. Then I think when it comes to this issue of the AstraZeneca vaccine for over 65s, like, I think if you looked at the European Medicines Agency press conference last week and what Stephen Donnelly said immediately afterwards, I don't think this is any major surprise that it's not going to be used as widely for the over 70s, because what the EMA said when it authorised the vaccine last Friday was that it wasn't making a recommendation to give it to people over 55, but it said it was saying that based on the evaluation, it can be used for all over 18s. And it said this is about options. It's about making sure that when countries are looking what they need and what profile of their countries need, then they have this option available to them. So what they were saying is this is really up to member states themselves. That was something that the government did expect from the European Medicines Agency. It made the communications around this a lot more difficult. You know, if the EMA had come out and said, do not give it to over 65s, or they had come out and said, yes, absolutely 100% give it to over 65s, it would have been an easier message to sell. But the fact that their approval of it was in some ways conditional and lukewarm meant for the Irish government, if they had used it for this age category, they would have faced an awful lot of questions, more questions than they're facing now, over when over 70s are going to start receiving their vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, it's a topic that the opposition parties are tracking really, really closely, as well as what the government is doing in the interim while the virus is still around, in the event of people not having the vaccine itself or waiting to get the vaccine. We're joined now by Tommy Mescal, also of our political unit. Tommy, you've been trying to look at policies in relation to both government and opposition parties. What areas have you been zoning in on?
So I was trying to find out, I suppose, how opposition differs from government when it comes to international travel, and then also how each opposition party, the differences between each opposition party when it comes to their stance on international travel, and how do you curb it and how do you keep case numbers down. So I spoke to them about what they'd like to see done about airports and mandatory quarantine, and also what they'd like to see done about the border. There's two opposition parties that advocate zero COVID, it should be said, but not absolute zero COVID. They acknowledge that it's tricky to achieve that in Ireland. We're a so-called leaky country, according to Professor Nolan from NEFIT. But Social Democrats and People Before Profit would like to get as close to zero as possible, and they're calling their strategy zero COVID. The others have a similar, they're almost there as well in how they'd like to achieve low numbers, but they're cautious about putting the name zero COVID on it. But as I said, I went around and I spoke to the different parties. This kicks off with Darren O'Rourke. He is the Sinn Féin transport spokesperson, and he's telling me about his strategy, preferred strategy, when it comes to mandatory quarantine in airports.
I think first and foremost, we need to send a very clear, unambiguous message in terms of the need at this point in time for only absolutely essential travel to be happening. And that needs to be supported by a policy regime, by a system of checks and controls and regulations that should be a mandatory quarantine, hotel quarantine, for everybody landing on the island of Ireland, arriving on the island of Ireland for non-essential purposes. I think that sends a very clear message in terms of the position of the Irish government.
Duncan Smith, Labour Party spokesperson for transport. The government has consistently said they didn't support mandatory hotel quarantine over the last number of months, when people like ourselves were saying it's something that needed to be looked into, that they didn't agree with a testing regime at the airport, or indeed a testing regime for people coming into the country. But what we're finding out now is that they actually just dismissed those offhand. They didn't actually look into it. They didn't draw up draft legislation. They didn't actually game out or crisis plan for this, which is why we're now weeks behind where we should be. In fact, we're months behind where we should be on this. So yes, I'd like to see stronger measures in relation to travel.
Roisin Shortall, TD, co-leader of the Social Democrats. Kind of thing that the government is talking about now, what they term home quarantining. I think that's a nonsense. It's unworkable. It's unenforceable. And the Taoiseach more or less admitted that in the Dáil to me when I raised it yesterday. You know, if we're serious about stopping the importation of the virus, well, then we do that through hotel quarantining, mandatory hotel quarantining.
Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD. We need all non-essential travel to stop, even before we talk about mandatory quarantine. There shouldn't be non-essential travel in or out of this country. And that needs to be enforced. And people should be turned back if they are here for reasons, any other reason other than absolutely strictly defined essential activity. And then those that are allowed in must quarantine. That's what's being done in New Zealand, Australia, and all of the countries who have proven effective in dealing with COVID and actually allowing people to return to normal. And you see, this is where it is linked. It's not just about travel. For us, it is linked to a wider strategy to get our lives back.
Heather Tobin, TD for Meath West and leader of AIM2. We're saying that people should be tested before they come to the country, tested when they arrive in the country, and if that test shows that in any way that they could have COVID, that there will be a 14-day quarantine in the country. In a hotel, absolutely. Like, listen, the government has built their policy on expecting people to do the right thing when it comes to travel, and it simply hasn't worked.
I suppose, Tommy, the thing about when it comes to the Republic of Ireland, international travel isn't just defined by our airports and ports. We also have the issue of the border. What did you find out where parties stood on that issue?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And it's one of the main reasons why they all acknowledge that it's very hard to absolutely achieve zero COVID. They're all in broad agreement that there should be better policing around the border areas, but they're saying that the 5 kilometre checks should be enough to achieve that. They're obviously reluctant to say that, you know, you should have checkpoints on the border itself. And then, you know, some say that it should be possible to achieve an all-island approach, but I ask them, you know, if that's not possible, then what do you do then? I spoke to each party about this. What would they do about the border, assuming that an all-island strategy couldn't be achieved? And again, this clip kicks off with Darren O'Rourke of Sinn Féin.
You deal with it by sharing the data in exactly the same way, because how is the system going to work in Dublin Airport? Your information is shared, you're triaged, you're an essential worker, you don't have to go into mandatory quarantine, you're a non-essential worker, you do have to go in. So it should be managed in exactly the same way. If the information is shared in real time with the authorities in the south, if somebody does try and avoid it, well, they're very easily followed up.
What we can do is work to achieve a very high level of cooperation and coordination. A starting point is having very good tracing of who comes in. So if somebody fills out a form saying where they're going to be, that we share that data, where there are people from the north who are coming in through Irish ports and airports, and that they reciprocate with that. It also does mean, you know, fairly intensive policing around the border.
I mean, we've advocated for checks 5 kilometres inside our border, and we'd hope that our security services would work with the Northern Ireland Police Force as well to see, to make sure that they could do stuff on the other side. But an all-island approach would be ideal. It doesn't seem like that's a runner. It's greatly disappointing, and the people it's disappointing most is communities both sides of the Irish border. We need to do everything we can inside our official border and work interagency with the North insofar as we can. But yeah, it is a weak point, but it's something we have to do everything we can to make stronger.
You have zones within the country, and it's not about a North-South border. It's important to stress that. There's an assumption there that somehow the North is going to be worse than, I don't know, the Southwest. The point is, as they've done in Australia, they've broken the country up into several zones. If that zone eliminates community transmission, life returns to normal. But if there's an outbreak in a particular region, it could be the North, it could be the South, it could be Dublin, then travel in and out of that region is limited and prevented.
To be honest, I think, you know, there's very clear guidelines with regards to people not travelling outside of the 5 kilometres from their homes. If people adhere to that as they should, that's not going to be a problem in any ways. There are people who travel to work north and south who are essential workers. And, you know, I'm not going to say that a nurse, you know, living in Newry, working in Cavan Hospital, should not travel to work. I'm not going to say that a doctor living in Clonus and operating out of Enniskillen Hospital should not travel to work. That would be nonsense. I think people should adhere to the 5K non-essential travel limit when it comes to the border, as in any other county.
What do you make of that, to sum it up, Tommy? I mean, particularly when it comes to the issue of the border, was a common approach basically across the parties, maybe PPP going a step further with their idea of regionalisation, but nearly an acceptance that it's complicated and then you have to do something, doing something is better than nothing.
Yeah, and it should be said too that Social Democrats, I think, also would be more in line with the idea that you would have zones if you're going for proper zero COVID, and therefore you'd be shutting down zones, and therefore then the, you know, to see it as a simple North-South issue, you know, that wouldn't really come into play. But also what they're talking about there is something that the government have sort of said that that's their ambition too, that they would like to see more data sharing, that they do believe that the 5 kilometre checks should be enough to prevent, you know, non-essential travel, you know, north and south, and that there are essential workers, and it's the nature of our life on this island that there's, you know, movement across the border all the time. So I actually thought that they weren't at complete odds with the government when it came to what to do about the border. However, they all wanted an all-island strategy. Most of them thought it's possible and that there hasn't been enough effort to achieve that. But, you know, the likes of the Labour Party were acknowledging that, you know, it might not happen. It's a difficult thing to achieve. And they were the party actually that were suggesting that, you know, you have more checkpoints along the border, and they seem to think that once you have those stations in place, that that should be a deterrent, and hopefully that should work.
Tommy Mescal, thanks very much for that report. Mary, just following on from all of that, one thing which does unite opposition parties is their claim that the government isn't moving quickly enough. If you take just one example, the question of mandatory quarantine and the question of hotels, that the government's saying due to having to balance the rights of, on the one hand, detaining people for public health, and yet on the other hand, respecting their constitutional rights, they need to get the legislation right. That's going to take a couple of weeks. And the opposition are united in saying, this is way too slow. Number one, you should have had the legislation prepared already. And number two, we're prepared to sit in the dole for as long as is needed to get the legislation through. What's your judgment on those different positions?
Yeah, I think in some ways, you know, people are reluctant to put a label on zero COVID. Some parties are using it and some aren't. The term itself is causing some difficulties. And, you know, everyone agrees that they want zero COVID. You know, it's just how you get there. That's the issue. But I think there have been some, you know, as it works in the background on this particular piece of legislation. Now, it is taking longer than they had expected it to take. In fact, actually, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, that did warn that it would take a couple of weeks, but the Fianna Fáil side had hoped, you know, that they could get the legislation done a bit sooner. So it is taking longer. But I think what we are seeing now is a sort of evolving attitude from the government in relation to this. If you think back to last September, when it was first raised as a concept, zero COVID in the Dáil, the government was really strongly opposed to it back then, just dismissed it as a sort of nonsense, not workable, not something that NPHET had made a recommendation to them on at the time. But then just think to last week, and the Taoiseach, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, was saying in the Dáil last week that, you know, it's something that he would be open to having a discussion on. And then that followed on from the Taoiseach, with the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, telling Labour's Alan Kelly that, you know, I think we're further We're closer together in our views on this than you might think. And, you know, he also did suggest that there should be some sort of discussion. And he said, we may not be too far apart and we may well end up in the same place on this issue. That's what Leo Varadkar said to Alan Kelly. So, like, you know, the government has also left open the possibility of expanding those rules around mandatory quarantining in hotels down the line if the need came to that. But I think they're also conscious too that public opinion in relation to this is something that could also be cyclical, that could also change. And if it came down to it really, and a real discussion was had on it, would people really, when their minds were focused, want this, you know, particularly if it meant people might not be able to come home if they had a very sick relative or for a funeral or in circumstances like that.
Micheál, just parking the question of international travel for a moment, was there anything else this week, and what to a certain extent has been something of a slow political week, that grabbed your attention?
Yeah, just on that question of zero COVID as well, there has been discussions today between People Before Profit and Sinn Féin trying to agree a unified position across the opposition around it. But it doesn't seem that is going to happen anytime soon anyway. After that meeting, the sense from Sinn Féin is that they are proposing a lot of what People Before Profit are saying, but they are using the term maximum suppression policy rather than zero COVID. So it does seem that they will be different strands remaining in relation to the approach there. Generally, the week has been quieter, I suppose, but you could sense at the parliamentary party meetings last night, it was what had happened at the European Commission level last Friday, and all that had followed from that was one of the big topics of discussion, and then the vaccines as well. Other questions too, generally, about how the Oireachtas and the Dáil is running, kind of, they're scattered throughout the weeks, and you can see that in the exchanges that took place yesterday between the last Ceann Comhairle and some speakers, including those from Sinn Féin, around speaking time and the speaking time in the context of how things are being run down in the National Convention Centre in particular, and some unease caused by Sinn Féin then writing to the Ceann Comhairle about this, and the Ceann Comhairle at the business committee this morning saying that he wants an apology in relation to that, and apparently there is contact going to take place between the Ceann Comhairle and Sinn Féin today to try and resolve that matter. As well as that too, you can see the entire question about social distancing and masks, some concern at Oireachtas level that people in the convention centre aren't wearing their masks enough. So it's against that backdrop that politics is being played out this week.
And Mary, just picking up one of those topics, the issue of the Northern Ireland Protocol. And if you were something of a cynic, you might see, say, the DUP and the Conservative Party, both the architects of Brexit, complaining about the consequences of Brexit.
Yeah, and I guess this in many ways is sort of the intersection between two of the biggest political challenges faced by the government here in a very long time. One, the need to prevent a hard border emerging on this island. And it became clear then on Friday night that there was a risk of this imperative being undone or being thrown into some sort of turmoil by the other great political challenge of our time, which is getting the country vaccinated. So it was fascinating to watch how these two issues blended on Friday night, and it all sort of happened so quickly. You know, there was an expectation that the commission was due to publish this document around controls on exports of the vaccine out of the union, but you know, this caught everyone by surprise, what happened on Friday night, and it was amazing the sort of pace at which the diplomatic arrangements kicked in to get on the phone to Ursula von der Leyen. So the mistake was immediately corrected. But as you pointed out, you know, it has left the Northern Ireland Protocol, agreed painstakingly in that Brexit process, it has left that very fragile. And, you know, I think it's also in some ways damaged Ireland's relationship in some ways with the European Commission. I think there's a lot of questions now that politicians, TDs, MEPs want answered in relation to how it came to this. Because, you know, it would certainly, at the very least, show that Ursula von der Leyen and or her officials haven't really grasped the unique position of the North and just how easily you know, it can disrupt the stability or seek to disrupt stability in the north. But it also points to, you know, where is the accountability in relation to this? I think if you looked at the weekend, Simon Coveney and Micheál Martin were being careful, you know, enough. You know, the other EU member states were sort of rallying around her saying, yes, this was a mistake and it's been corrected. But there was a change of tone yesterday. Simon Coveney went in Morning Ireland. And, you know, he could barely wait for Mary Wilson to ask him a question before he jumped straight in and started talking about the tensions that were taking place in the north. And he said the decision by the EU Commission made on Friday made it a lot worse. And while it wouldn't have happened at all if there was consultation, he said it has triggered a political response in the north, which makes the implementation of this protocol even more difficult.
Yeah, it's a topic we may come back to, is the question of Ireland's relationship with the European Union and whether or not we're critical enough if mistakes are made by the Commission to call them out, and what consequences flow from any mistakes, particularly if you have an institution like the European Commission as opposed to a member state where clearly there are direct consequences if someone happens to mess up. But just to draw this podcast to a close, Micheál, if I can bring you back in, St. Patrick's Day and the question of whether or not our Taoiseach should go to Washington if it's the case an invitation is extended.
Yeah, but while an invitation hasn't been extended yet, it's almost certain that it will be. Well, there's no doubt that it will be. So then it's just a matter of this wider St. Patrick's Day visits can be controversial. Sometimes this notion of ministers travelling around the world, that won't be happening this year. But of course, there would generally be an expectation that if it's possible at all, the Taoiseach will travel to Washington. That is the official view, while they're saying that no decision has been made on it. And if things go a certain direction, well, there would still be some type of remote event in place to mark the day. It would be interesting to see just how much opposition there would be to the Taoiseach making that trip. I mean, the majority view, I think, in the Dáil would be that the trip is beneficial. But of course, if the vaccine programme isn't rolling out at pace by the middle of March, well, then maybe some TDs could take a different view about that, and no doubt they would be vociferous in their opposition to it.
Yeah, Mary, I mean, I suppose it was Paddy Tobin, the ANTHU leader, who's been putting his finger on this, saying if we're talking about public health advice and we're supposed to be showing a good example to the citizens, it doesn't make sense for the Taoiseach to be travelling. And others saying you must be crazy. I mean, this is the greatest access we have to one of the most powerful people on earth. You should never stand it down. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I think what the Irish government does have on its side is that, you know, previously with other presidents, if they dropped this visit and didn't go ahead, there was always this risk there that it might not be resumed the following year and they might lose this great privilege that the Irish government gets every year, this great access. I think that isn't really a concern this time around, owing to Joe Biden's much expressed connections and love of Ireland. I think if it didn't happen this year, then there's no risk of it not resuming, you know, next year. So, we'll have to wait and see. And I think it'll be a little while yet before a final decision is made.
I suppose the starting point is, does he get an invitation at all? We will be tracking it, though, for you. Mm-hmm. I'd like to thank Mary Regan.
Before we go, tell us.
This better be important, though.
Yeah. Tell us about the picture of you on our colleague Colm O'Callaghan's blog, the Blackpool Sentinel, dating back to 1988. You at a gig in the front square in Trinity.
Yeah, it was a sunny day. And I was going to see, do you have half an hour? I was going to see the then sort of, what would you call them? This sort of New York rocket, which had come over, Public Enemy, big rap artists, incredibly influential and really influential then. And they had performed in McGonagall's, I think, the previous night in South Ann Street, and I got to see them. And then they were again performing out on the grass in Trinners. And so I stood there, and little did I know in 1988 that years on, in 2021, a photograph would happen to appear on Twitter with someone saying, this looks an awful lot like Paul Cunningham of RTÉ. And as I say, I couldn't deny it. I couldn't deny it.
Thumbs up emoji.
Exactly.
They were the days when you didn't have to worry about thumbs up emojis.
I thought they were the days when you didn't have to worry about photographs. You know, no mobile phones. No one was going to take a quick pick and flash it online. But, you know, these things come back to haunt you. Anyway, Mary Regan, Micheál Lehane and Tommy Mescal, thank you very much for joining us. Thanks for listening to Your Politics Podcast. Please do subscribe. Please do leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. But until the next time, take care.